Wherever digital storytelling is practiced, ethical considerations are never far away. Giving a voice to people who might not otherwise be heard, in the hope of bringing about change, is a laudable aspiration. But in doing so, we must be aware of the possibility of harm. As with the medical profession, in our attempts to bring about healing, at personal, group, organizational, or societal level, we must first do no harm. My name is Pip Hardy. I'm one of the founders of the Patient Voices Program, the first digital storytelling project in the world dedicated to collecting and sharing stories of health and social care, and sometimes the lack of it. Our vision is that by giving ordinary people who receive and deliver care a voice and a powerful way of sharing their stories, those who design healthcare services might be moved to do so in a more humane and compassionate manner. As digital storytelling facilitators, we have to find a balance between the ethics of democratic access and a personal aesthetic form that is intended to have the greatest possible relevance and impact. In doing so, we strive to create a safe space in which storytellers can explore and articulate the stories of their lives and, potentially, share them with a worldwide audience. When working with vulnerable people, such as mental health service users, people with disabilities, survivors of violence and disaster, asylum seekers, refugees, and others, we hear stories that are often traumatic, sometimes harrowing, frequently sad, occasionally joyful, and almost always transformative. While encouraging storytellers to give voice to their experiences and to share them with others, it is essential that we are as aware of the potential to do harm as of the potential to do good. We were privileged at the very start of the Patient Voices program to meet Ian Kramer and Monica Clark. They were our first two storytellers. In addition to having a great deal of experience of using healthcare services, they both happened to be trained as lawyers. Ian told us how much he disliked it when researchers took his stories and then selected only the bits deemed to be pertinent to the research. "And what's more," he said, "once I've signed a consent form, that's the last I hear of them. I don't have a chance to see what they've decided to leave in or take out." Monica chimed in that she was fed up with people building reputations, making fortunes, and gaining PhDs on the back of her story, with no acknowledgement, of course, because she was supposed to be anonymous. "Who benefits from that?" she asked. "And why don't I get to choose whether or not to be anonymous?" And so we worked closely with Ian and Monica to establish a process that would ensure they were comfortable about their stories and how they were being used. Their knowledge and experience determined the choice of license under which Patient Voices stories would be released. But more than that, they convinced us that a one-time opportunity to sign a consent form was inappropriate for the work of digital storytelling and our intention to make stories publicly available so that important lessons could be learned from them. And so, over the years, the Patient Voices program has developed a carefully considered three-stage consent and release process that enables storytellers to retain control of their stories at all times. Founded on the principles of trust, equity, justice, and respect, and informed by early storytellers with exceptional sensitivities combined with legal knowledge, the development of robust procedures has been essential to the program's work. Issues of representation, safety, consent, release, copyright, ownership and intellectual property are complex, and there are no easy or universal answers. The development of our consent and release process has been a journey we have travelled for over a decade. It's not finished yet, but I'd like to invite you to share part of that journey with me.